This is a system that is designed against us. And guess what? It is intentionally designed to get us to spend more. So how do we fight back against an intentionally designed system? We fight back with intention. But it's up to us to be the ones who intentionally add back those friction points and those speed bumps between us and spending our money.
You're listening to Nurses on Fire, the podcast for nurses by nurses aspiring to financial independence. I'm your host, Nasima McElroy of Financially Intentional. Let's spark some flames, y'all.
Welcome to episode 81 of the Nurses on Fire podcast.
Thank you so much for tuning in. If this is your first time listening, welcome and cheers to igniting your fire. I would be eternally grateful if you took a moment to subscribe, leave a review, and share with other nurses that can benefit. Now, this episode is really special to me because I have a special guest, Ryan Sterling, on, and he talks about his transition from being a consumer to an owner. And this is something that I am trying to instill in my kids. Well, at least Naima, because she's six, the baby doesn't know what's going on. But I'm teaching Naima how to be an owner through investing. So their college fund is already fully funded. So instead of having people contribute to that as birthday gifts or whatever random gifts when they want to buy them something, I'm asking for them to buy them stocks. And I'm using an app called Stockpile in order to do that. So they can purchase individual stocks and kind of look at how their stocks is trending. So Naima, do you want to share your favorite stocks to invest in?
So my favorite stocks are Disney, Tesla.
And why?
Because Tesla, it goes up, and then Disney, I like to watch Disney on my iPad.
And what happens when a stock goes down?
When a stock goes down, it means it's on sale.
So is that a good time to buy a stock?
Yes.
So what's your favorite thing about investing?
My favorite thing about investing is that I get to own the companies that I love.
And in this episode, we learn how to go from consumers to owners. Ryan Sterling is the owner of Future You Wealth. He is a wealth manager, speaker, and published author of You're Making Other People Rich. As a financial advisor, he challenges and inspires people to live life on their terms by taking accountability and action over their wealth. Ryan has personally worked with thousands of people to help them go from being a consumer of stuff to an owner of capital and live life on their terms. He has been featured in media outlets such as Business Insider, CNN Money, HuffPost, and is a TEDx speaker. Before starting Future You Wealth, he worked at some of the world's leading financial institutions such as Goldman Sachs, AllianceBernstein, and Capital Group. Episode 81 of the Nurses on Fire podcast, this nurse is shifting her mindset from being a consumer to an owner. All right, Nurses on Fire. I am honored to have Ryan Sterling of Future You Wealth on to join us. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
Hey, it's good to be on.
Awesome. And the reason why I really wanted to have Ryan on is because he has a lot of experience as a financial planner. He's been in the game talking about money for years. He has TED Talks about it, but he has this book that really caught my eye, and it talks about consumerism. And I'll give you the opportunity to share your background and talk more about your book, but it's just really an honor to have you here because I know my audience can learn a lot from what you have to share.
Oh, good. I'm excited to share it.
Well, go ahead and tell us about your background. Like, I want to know about your money story first.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, it's funny. I mean, it's a story that's wrapped in irony because I've been a practicing financial advisor for over 15 years. I've worked at some of the largest firms in the industry. I worked at Goldman Sachs out of business school. I worked at a large firm called AllianceBernstein. I worked at a large investment management firm called Capital Group. These are some of the biggest names in the wealth management industry. And I was working with some of the wealthiest people in the country. My typical client was a high net worth client. And, you know, I went in bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, ready to, you know, take the world by storm. And sure enough, like I did. And I was checking all the boxes. I was going up the corporate ladder. I had my sights on the next title, the next benchmark, and I was hitting it. But the entire time, I was neglecting my own personal finances. And I got caught up in a phenomenon known as lifestyle creep. So lifestyle creep is basically when you make more income becomes an invitation to develop more expensive habits. You can wear nicer clothes. You can go to nicer restaurants, nicer clubs. You can drive a nicer car. And every time you make more money, you make an extra $20,000, you spend an extra $25,000. You make an extra $50,000, you spend an extra $60,000. That was the cycle I was in for so many years. And I got to this point in my mid-30s where I was just kind of being somewhat reflective at the end of the year. And I wasn't really happy where I was. And I looked around and I said, wait a second, I was senior vice president. I was doing the job that I wanted. I was making the income that 10 years earlier I defined as my I made it number. So I did it. Like I checked off all the boxes. I hit the spot I wanted to be. And I wasn't happy. And my marriage wasn't going well. And then when I looked around, I said, like, what's going on? I realized that I was just a consumer. I was consuming stuff. I was consuming bad energy. I was letting things consume me. We were consuming bad food. We were just consumers in this life. And when my wife and I really looked at this and said, are we happy? Are we living a life that we designed for ourselves? Are we living a life that was designed for us? We looked around and said, you know what? Like, we're just falling victim to the traps that so many people fall victim to. And if we actually really think about what we truly want at the core of who we are, we don't want a lot of this stuff. We don't want to be consumers. We don't want to be dependent on the next paycheck or bonus or the next promotion to keep this thing going. We want to be more owners. We want to take more ownership. We want to have more independence, more agency, again, more ownership. So we really thought about how do we make this transition from being a consumer to being an owner? And that's really the point of this book and really what I speak about today. It's again, going from that consumer mentality to an owner mentality.
So like, where was the exact like breaking point? And then how did you know that it was the consumerism that drove it? Like so many people just, they know that they're unhappy, but they're not sure why. Like, how did that shift for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. It wasn't necessarily just like one event or epiphany. It was just kind of a series of events. It was, again, sitting at the end of the year and realizing that like, I hit that number. I had this number etched in my head that like, when I hit this number, that's when like I've made it. And I realized I hit the number and like, I didn't feel any different. I didn't feel financially secure. I didn't feel any happier. You know, my wife and I, again, we were in a really bad place. We weren't connecting. We weren't communicating. We weren't on the same page. We were just, again, both consuming, and we were kind of on the brink of having our marriage ending. There was also just a couple of events happened with respect to just feeling sluggish and just feeling not very healthy. And again, it was just all of these things just combined all at once. And actually, now that I think about it, really what was more or less kind of the catalyst of changing it all was actually first actually getting our health in order. And we watched the documentary, What the Health on Netflix. And after watching that, we just said, you know what, like, why don't we try this? Why don't we try going vegan for a little while and see how it goes? And once we did that, it just, for whatever reason, when we started eating cleaner, we stopped drinking less, we just had this enormous clarity. And it was that clarity where we said, wait a second. Is this the life that we really want to live? And I was able to then just kind of like, I once described this as like, we hit the brakes going on the highway. And I don't think we hit the brakes. We more or less kind of tapped on the brakes we took an off ramp and we said, like, let's get out a compass and see, like, what direction are we going? And is it the right direction? Or do we want to do something else? And I think, again, having that space and eating really clean and healthy helped provide some mental clarity. And I was able to look at people around me in my environment at work, and I was able to look at the people who were 10 years above me. And this is no judgment, but I was kind of looking at them and saying, is that where I want to be in 10 years? Because 10 years ago, I wanted to be where I am now, and I'm there, and I'm not feeling it. So wait, let me look 10 years in the future. Okay, is that really where I want to be? And that it was able to kind of then backdoor us into thinking, all right, let's stop. Let's, again, go on the off ramp. Let's take out a compass. Is this what we want? Is this the life that we want? Yes or no? And ultimately the answer was no. And then the next thing was, okay, are we on the same team? Okay. Like, can we define what we want to accomplish together? Okay. The answer is yes, which it was. Okay. What do we need to do now to detach from being a consumer? Cause we realized that the consumerism was what was putting us in this hole, in this dark place. How do we get out of it? And how do we take more ownership?
I love that analogy of taking that off ramp and then just that, let's recalibrate here. Like, I love that. But I also love what you said, because it's super relevant that, you know, you were there, you hit that number. And for so many people, it's that fight to like get there, like, oh, but when I get there, I'll be happy. Or when I get there, I can do X, Y, and Z. Or when I get there, I can now start working on whatever money goals or whatever. And you're going to get there and you're still going to be the same person. You're bringing that same person with you. So ain't nothing going to change when you get there. Even if you get there, you could just be struggling your whole life to get there. So I think it's super powerful to hear from people that have arrived, that made it. I mean, you've checked all your boxes, and I'm a box checker too, and I know how important that can be. But if you're doing it and you're unhappy, it's all for naught. Like, it's like, what's the point? So I love that. I love that you shared that. So I want to know, what are the things that you shifted in your life to go from being a consumer to an owner?
Mm-hmm. Well, so much of this, you know, and a lot of the theme of the book and a lot of what I'll talk about today and I talk about in my talks is just creating some space. Again, when we realized that things weren't necessarily what we wanted to be, instead of like slamming the brakes and then going a different direction, it was, again, I use the metaphor of just like tapping the brakes and taking the off ramp, because we needed to create some space. And instead of making a wholesale change, just stopping to say, number one, the first thing we did is we asked ourselves a question: what do we want? But we gave two constraints. Our wants can't be more money, and they can't be material things. It's a simple question, but it's a really hard answer. And we thought about, like, what do we, if we strip out the material, like, what do we want? And when we answered the question, it really came down to, like, we want better connection as a couple. We want to feel better physically. We wanted more independence. We wanted more agency over our lives. We didn't want to be dependent on companies and paychecks and bonuses to support our livelihood. And ultimately, it also came down to, we wanted more adventure in our lives. We checked all the boxes, but we were left kind of empty. Like, we needed a new risk and we needed a new challenge to pursue. And the way that our life was set up, it wasn't delivering on that. So we knew that we needed to make some changes, but at the same time, we're also grounded in reality. And we're also in a place where we have really good jobs that are paying a good amount of money. So it wasn't saying, okay, I don't want to work at this company anymore. I don't want to like work for anyone. So I'm going to break ties and we're going to go off on this new venture. It was saying, okay, this is not where we want to be, but at the same time, we need to give ourselves a couple of years. We need to give ourselves a couple of years to give some time and space to change behavior, to repair the balance sheet, to start saving up more money. Because ultimately what we decided is we want to be entrepreneurs. We want to be business owners. This is something that we always wanted to do. This would be a new, exciting adventure and just a new challenge for us, but also a way where we could create a business and work with clients the way that we wanted to work with clients, to create our own schedule, and ultimately to have that independence that we were craving. But at the same time, it was also having the realization and having the patience to say, it's going to take a couple of years to get there. So let's give ourselves that space. Let's observe what we're doing and the actions we're taking. And once we were able to observe, and we actually just started tracking all of our expenses, we put our balance sheet right there front and center. We created a vision board to see where we wanted to go to. So by having the vision of where we wanted to go to, but doing a true diagnostic and reality check of where our money is going today, we then started asking the question, okay, are we consuming in a way that's getting us closer to this life that we want to live? Or is it taking us away from it?
I love it. It's making your actions align with your vision. So that is beautiful. I love that. And so how many years did it take you to go from being this corporate VP to be an entrepreneur?
I was like a little over 2 years.
That's actually really good. But I like that you didn't just say, okay, I recognize that something is wrong. I'm just about to quit my job and then go do this thing. Because you are, like you said, you are grounded in reality. And most is, first of all, entrepreneurship is not for the faint of heart. It is hard and you got to have a little runway. So you did it the right way.
That's right. But then also really thinking about, like, when we gave that space and we started to think about, you know, it's funny because, you know, I think about where I was in my early 20s, and I think about just being bright-eyed, bushy-tailed and getting into this industry and wanting to make it and the excitement and the challenges. And, you know, I was living in an efficiency apartment, driving a beat-up car, you know, wearing the same suit every day, but I was like super excited. And I was like, really, I was honored to be included at the firms I was working at. I had challenges in front of me. I had that I wanted to check the boxes. I had something that I was aspiring to. I was getting better. And I realized, again, in my mid-30s, where, okay, here I am now. I'm making really good money. I can afford, you know, 20 designer suits. I can have a luxury car. We're going out to expensive dinners. But then I'm like, wait a second. I was way happier where I was in my early 20s when I couldn't do any of this stuff. And again, I had one suit and like I couldn't afford to go out to expensive dinners. But when I gave that space and I started detaching, I realized like, wait a second, like the good stuff in life it's the connection with people, it's the challenges, it's the areas of personal growth. So within those 2 years, even though I was super excited to, okay, I want to go to this new place in my life, but knowing that I needed to stay where I was because I needed the paycheck and I needed to, again, get my habits and behaviors better with money. And it's better to do that when you have money coming in. I signed up for a marathon. And I wasn't a runner, but I knew I needed a new challenge in front of me. I knew I needed something that scared me and something that was exciting. But the funny thing is, when I signed up for the marathon, I got really into running and I went out for my first 5 mile run. And then I did an 8 mile run and then a 12 mile run. Like there was like this excitement, like, I can't believe I just did that. And it got me reconnected to like the, you know, exciting part of me when I was in my early 20s. But I think what that did and that what that showed me now in my late 30s, early 40s is to say, this is the stuff that I need. The material things aren't going to do it. Like the expensive dinners, like, they're actually, I really don't like most of these restaurants I'm going to, you know, like having 20 designer suits. Like, why do I need 20 designers? I don't need 20 designer suits. Like the clothes that I have delivered to me, well, I just know that 3 months from now, they're just going to be old stuff in my closet. Like I realized like this stuff wasn't doing it. The consuming wasn't doing it. It was the personal growth. It was the love. It was the connection. It was the having a goal that I knew was going to provide a lot of meaning and independence that was in front of me. That's the stuff that got me excited.
I love that. Oh my God. When you said you ran marathons, my heart started beating. I just can't. I'm like,
that was just my thing. But I'll tell you, I was talking to somebody who had major issues consuming, and they're not necessarily someone that wanted to do an athletic endeavor, but they're really into theater. And they signed up for a community theater project where they were, you know, kind of part in a local production. And it was funny getting reconnected to something that they enjoyed doing as a kid, you know, being a character, being a part of this troupe, having to go out and perform. It actually reframed his mind with personal growth, where he got really excited about that and started consuming a lot less. Because again, now he was consuming something that was making him grow as a person. And he realized all of the stuff that he was using as a way to fill this void just wasn't doing it for them.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I feel like we fall into this trap of consumerism because there's some sort of void and everybody's void is different. That consumerism, because it's like that temporary like dopamine hit, it's like it feels good initially, but ultimately like the... it doesn't do anything to bring us joy in the long term. And that's what I was going to say. Like, it's totally like a temporary, like, fix. And once you can replace that with something that actually really is fulfilling and brings you joy, you'll notice that your consumerism drastically decreases. And that's ultimately why I brought you on here, because I see it, especially with nurses. I mean, we get those jobs, we start spending, or we think we have to do X, Y, and Z for our kids. And so, you know, we're in a position where we're not in a good financial space, but we have all of the things. So it looks like we're out here like doing big things, but we're really broke. And so I just want you to help me speak into these nurses so that they'll know how to make that transition for themselves.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. But I think one thing that will help is this realization that I came to. And one thing I want to say is that when I talk about tracking expenses, when I talk about, you know, getting connected to your money, it's not about saying no. Okay. It's about saying yes to the things that add value and no to the things that don't. So you could say that, oh, well, buying a new pair of shoes, like that provides a lot of value. Okay. Does it though, really? Like, again, that's an initial dopamine boost. But is it getting you to where you want to be? Or is it just more stuff that's accumulating? And it doesn't mean don't have a nice pair of shoes, but maybe you have two pairs of really nice shoes that you actually use and that's it. I've worked with people who have a closet worth of $100,000 worth of shoes that's no longer worth $100,000 anymore, but they spent $100,000 on those shoes. Like something wasn't working, right? When you feel like you get a pair of shoes, you wear them a couple times and then you need another one. Like obviously there's something psychological going on. So again, it's not to say don't have nice things, but do you really need the quantity? And so I'm a competitive person. And this is something that really helped me. So when I was trying to detach from being a consumer and just really thinking about like, why is it so hard to stop? Because I talk about, I had that realization, but it wasn't an overnight thing. Like I also had to detach from the allure of consumption. And something hit me one day when I was talking to a buddy of mine. So a friend of mine is in the tech space. He's in the venture capital world. And he was starting a new company. He was raising money. And he was working with this venture capital firm and he was having a hard time working with them. And he was venting to me one day and he said, Ryan, he goes, this venture capital firm, they are killing me. He's like, they keep telling me I need to reduce the friction points between the customer and the sale. And when he said that to me, it was like a light bulb went off in my head. And I said, you know what? We live in this world where there are no friction points between us and spending our money. So it's one of those things where like, as much as we could say, people, come on, stop consuming, at the same time, it's rigged against us.
Right. I mean, like Amazon Prime is the devil. Like, you know,
when Amazon introduced one-click checkout, it's estimated that their revenues increased by $4 billion a year.
Yes. Reduce the friction. Yep.
By one-click checkouts. Reduce the friction points. And you know, you think about it, you go back decades ago, there used to be natural friction points that existed between us and spending our money. So let's talk about shoes, for example. You know, go back decades ago, if you wanted to buy a pair of shoes, you had to say, okay, I need a pair of shoes. Okay, do I have cash on me? Yes or no? Okay, if the answer is no, you got to drive to the bank, you have to wait in line, you have to get cash from a teller, there's a friction point. You then have to drive to a store, there's a friction point. You have to dig through inventory. Do they have what you want? Do they have your size? Yes or no? If no, there's another friction point. You have to drive to another store. You think about something as simple as buying a pair of shoes could be a 3 to 6 hour event. But with each passing decade, you get easy pay solutions, credit cards, online shopping. And now you have the push notifications where all of these companies have our data. They can push, they know what we like, that we know our preferences, and they can now push stuff to us where all we have to do is press one button and you can have 20 pairs of shoes delivered a day later with free shipping. The friction is gone. So when I was thinking about this, I said, okay, this is a system that is designed against us. And guess what? It is intentionally designed to get us to spend more. So how do we fight back against an intentionally designed system, we fight back with intention. But it's up to us to be the ones who intentionally add back those friction points and those speed bumps between us and spending our money. So for those listening, this is not to say, hey, just, you know, get your fix somewhere else and don't consume anymore. I understand. I have great empathy. I was there before too. But it's to say, to have that intention and the mindfulness to say, okay, here are my trigger points. Here's the environment that's making me consume more than I need to. How do I get out of it? So it's as simple as like deleting your apps. I someone read my book and they sent me a note and they said they deleted all their sneaker apps. You don't need a sneaker app, right?
Why do you need an app for sneakers?
You don't need it. It could be as simple as I work with people where there's a rule in place where before doing any online checkout, you step away for 20 minutes. Sometimes all you need is that space. You just need that little bit of distance for you to realize, number one, your mind goes somewhere else. You work on something else. And by the time you come back to it, you're like, wait, do I really want that? Do I not? So it's whatever you can do. It could be as simple. I have a client that had to say no to Amazon for a month. It's not forever, but just, I don't care if it's cheaper to buy toothpaste at Amazon, go to the store to buy. Like, just say no for 1 month because they needed to create that space, that distance. So I'm a big proponent of today. We are the ones that need to add back the friction points between us and spending our money. And it's hard because, again, the system has been set up in a way to get us to overspend, to get us connected. Everybody wants you to download those apps. When I was in college, I worked at The Gap, and I used to get a bonus if someone signed up for the credit card. Why? Because they knew that if someone signs up for the Gap credit card, they are more inclined to spend at the Gap.
Of course, especially because, well, we won't talk about store credit cards, but we know they're not great.
I'm known as a debt slayer because of the $200,000 in student loans I slayed in 2.5 years. I hated those loans and dealing with the loan servicers. I was head down and focused and wanted to get rid of the debt as soon as possible. Knocking out these loans and seeing a zero loan balance was one of the most liberating feelings I have ever felt. But recently I learned that by not optimizing my student loan payoff strategy, I lost money. I'm talking about big money, y'all. I could have saved $80,000 if I had a customized student loan plan by the team at Student Loan Planner. Please don't make the same mistake as me. If you have student loan debt, especially in the six figures, head over to studentloanplanner.com/financiallyintentional to get your customized student loan plan today. Do you know how your retirement funds are invested? Do you know how much you're paying in fees? Chances are you're on the same boat as some of my coworkers. Some of them set up their retirement when they first got hired and never looked at it again. Some have let a computer select their investments and don't even know what they're invested in. Worst of all, some people have their retirement funds sitting in a savings account and they're not even invested in the market because they're afraid to lose money. That's hella scary, y'all. What's even scarier is that some of you listening don't even have a clue what I'm talking about. And guess what? This is super common. This has to change today. Let Bloom do the work for you. Head over to financiallyintentional.com/Bloom and get your free retirement account analysis. They'll check and see if your retirement account is optimized for you, and they'll let you know if you're paying too much in fees. That's Bloom with 3 O's. Bloom can also manage your retirement account on an ongoing basis so you can take the stress out of retirement planning. If you choose to work with Bloom, their fees are incredibly low, less than your Netflix subscription. You have enough to worry about. Let Bloom handle your retirement account. The hardest thing you'll have to do when it comes to your retirement is remember that Bloom is spelled with 3 O's. Head over to financiallyintentional.com/Bloom. Remember, spelled with 3 O's, and get your retirement account squared away today.
But, you know, it got me thinking where it's like, okay, so what's the secret? And I was working with high net worth clients, and yeah, there were some people that inherited their money and all that good stuff, and that's all well and good. But I was thinking about the people that were really truly like the self-made millionaires. What's the secret? And the secret is ownership, but more specifically, owning appreciating assets. So thinking about differentiating between depreciating assets and appreciating assets. So depreciating assets are anything you buy where if you were to sell it at a later date, it'd be worth less. So this shirt I'm wearing, the shoes that we have, those are depreciating assets. There's no way that someone would buy those shoes from you at a price for more than what you paid for it. You've already worn them. And it's so easy to spend on the depreciating assets. But I was thinking, what about skewing it though and saying, wait a second, instead of over-consuming on the depreciating assets, own appreciating assets, the assets that go up in value over time. So stocks, you know, real estate, you know, the assets that work for us, even when we're not. So I was thinking about, instead of buying the new iPhone upon release, buy Apple stock.
That's right. You know what?
Own the company. Be on the ownership side of it.
Yeah. I have a friend, his name is Wall Street Trapper, and he grew up kind of like in the streets. And so like his thing was, you know, surrounded by consumerism, surrounded by, you know, going to buy Louis Vuitton and Gucci and all those kind of things. And then like the thing that clicked for him that made sense to him was like, well, how much do these Gucci shoes cost? How much does a share of this stock cost? I'm about to buy this stock because that's about to make me some money. And that's what made it tangible for his friends as well. And so I think like if, when people shift like that, even my daughter, she's 6 years old. I told her last night, like, yeah, I'm going to set up your investment accounts because I want her to be more interested in investing because she's a super consumer. I mean, because she thinks she's rich. Okay. So I'm like, listen, I know you want to buy these dolls and I know you love Disneyland and we can't go to Disneyland. How about you own some Disney? And she was like, how do I do that? It's like, you buy stock. And so she's like, wait a minute. So I can own it? I could tell my friends I own Disney. And that's her whole thing, bragging to her friends. And so yeah, even just like 10 minutes before I hopped on with you, she was like, when are we going to go buy Disney?
But I love that. And I'm like, you should feel empowered. Like I own Apple stock.
Yes.
I walk by an Apple store. I see people at my company.
That's right. You're making me rich, boo. Yes. Yes.
That's what I'm talking about. Exactly. So no, all day long. So, you know, and you know, it's one of those things, like if you don't want to be someone that's, you know, thinking about what stocks to buy, you know, I'm not telling everyone to be a trader, but there are ways that you can invest in the US market with one click. And that's through an index fund. So an S&P 500 index fund, if you buy a share of an S&P 500 index fund, you own the 500 largest companies in the US.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And that's decreasing the friction, using that decreased friction for your own gain. So yes. And I'm an index fund advocate because I think people think investing is trading, which isn't the same thing. But yes, I'm like, listen, you want to own all the top companies that you love, go buy this index fund, dollar cost average, and forget it. Like it does not have to be that hard. It doesn't have to be that hard. It's just like continuously investing your money. It's the amount of time you're in the market. And that's it. Like you don't have to be no super duper entrepreneur. You don't have to make billions of dollars to be rich. You just have to go from being a consumer to an owner.
Exactly. So I'm gonna give you a case study here. So this is in the book. So talk about the way to make money as a stock investor is own low cost index funds, number one. So the S&P 500, invest in consistent increments. So it could be a couple hundred dollars every month. Don't overthink it, just the same amount every single month and hold for the long term and you will make money. So here's a case study for you. So there's a woman in the book, her name is Jody. She graduated college in summer of 2006. And when she graduated, she said, at the end of every month, I'm gonna save $500 and I'm gonna to invest it in an S&P 500 index fund. So at the end of each month, $500 saved and invested in an S&P 500 index fund. This is June of 2006. So she started right away. And 2006 was a pretty decent stock market year. So, you know, she ended the first 12 months with a balance of like 6,500 with total contributions of 6,000. And, you know, she just kept on doing it. But then she entered the financial crisis. And the financial crisis, the market basically lost half of its value, peak to trough, in about a year. There was a point where Jody had contributions of over $15,000, but a balance of $9,500. So she was losing money, but she just kept up with the process. $500 saved and invested at the end of each month. Well, the market started to recover. She kept up with the process, nothing more, nothing less. Fast forward to today, her balance is over $200,000 from $500 a month. Think about that. That's a night out. That's a pair of shoes and maybe a shirt or so, whatever it is, a month. That's all. So instead of having a closet full of stuff or things that have been donated, she has $200,000. That's closer, you know, getting her closer to living life on her own terms. So it doesn't take heroic actions, right? So she's in her mid-30s right now with a balance of over $200,000 from just $500 a month. That's not including what she did in her 401k.
Exactly. That's outside of her retirement account. So she's pushing up against like $1 million.
$500 a month.
It does not take much. And that's what I keep on telling people. People think that, oh, that means that I have to like be super frugal and eat beans and rice. No, it doesn't. It just means that you don't trick off at Target one day. Just one day, you know?
Exactly, 100%. And you know, it's, you know, what people tell me though, when they hear that example and a piece of feedback I get or pushback I get is, well, you know, look, that's great for her. I'm 35, I'm already behind.
Hey, too late, yeah.
Guess what? Time's gonna move and you're gonna be 50 someday. So why don't you just start now? And by the way, for the 50-year-old who says, well, that's great for the 35-year-old, like, you're going to be 65 someday. Start now. I have clients who are in their 60s, and this woman, she was telling me recently, she's like, oh gosh, I wish I would have started when I was 50. And it's amazing how we think about things. It's too late. It's never too late. If you're in your mid 30s right now, if you're 40 right now, you can start today. And I guarantee you, your future self, at the age of 55, 60, is going to be so happy that you started today.
So I know I look young, you know, I do have a baby face, but I didn't start on my journey until I was on my mid 30s. And that was with triple figures in debt, like mostly student loans, obviously. And just by making those shifts, like just being intentional about my money, it wasn't about making more money. It wasn't because I had reached this number. I was able to turn that around from six figures in debt to six figure net worth in 3 years, just because I decided to get started. So if I can just provide a little bit of inspiration for people who are in their mid 30s, there is hope.
I'll tell you a real quick story. So I was going to a wedding last year, and there's a friend of mine who is kind of classic high earner, but overspender. And she's trying to be better with her money. So she wanted some help. So again, good friend, we're about to go to this wedding. We're meeting our friend at this hotel in Brooklyn. It's a super swanky hotel. And we go to the bar first, right? And it's overpriced, but you know, we're going to a wedding, we're dressed up. Like, you know, we can live life too, right? So we're at this bar and she and I were ordering drinks for people. And she goes, I'll have a glass of champagne. And the guy goes, great. And I stopped and said, hold up, just curious. You know, how much is a glass of champagne? And the guy goes, $30. Okay, it's $30. And she goes, oh, do you have Prosecco? And he goes, yeah. I said, how much is Prosecco? He goes, $11. And she goes, oh, well, I'll take the Prosecco instead, right? So, okay, now by asking the price, she went from $30 to $11. Okay, so we didn't get just one round. We got two rounds, okay? So we have two rounds, we're having a good time. We're ready to go to the wedding. The wedding, this open bar at the wedding. The wedding's 5 minutes away. So we call an Uber. The Uber is literally less than a couple of minutes away. And then she goes, let's all get another round. I said, wait, hold on. Like the Uber's literally like 2 minutes away. Like, why don't we just go outside and wait? We're going to be at the party in less than 10 minutes. And she goes, oh, that makes sense. So just think about that. So without that intervention, she would have spent over $90 because she would have had three glasses of champagne, didn't realize they were $30 until she gets the bill. So instead of spending $90, that's not including tip, she instead spent $22 because she got two glasses of Prosecco. That's just one decision in a half hour period that's carved out $70. So you think about that $500, like it's not that hard to get to. If you just think about those little small actions, and by the way, if she was indifferent between champagne and Prosecco, and then again, with the third round, like we were leaving 5 minutes anyway, like this is not like a huge sacrifice in her life. So I use that example because it just shows you how just little small actions and being mindful of it can make a big difference.
A big, big difference. And so Ryan, you have been dropping gems. And I know if you're sharing these things that you have even more amazing and actionable things and steps that people can take in your book. So let everybody know where they can find your book and what they can hope to learn from it.
Yeah, for sure. So the book is called You're Making Other People Rich. A couple of different places you can get it. I'd say Amazon is probably, even though I rag on Amazon a lot, it's probably the easiest way to get it. So Amazon.com, You're Making Other People Rich. You can also go to my personal website, RyanSterling.com. So RyanSterling.com has more information about me. You can buy the book. There's a quiz to find out your money personality. That's basically the receptacle where every way that I work with people is at RyanSterling.com. So Amazon or RyanSterling.com. Those are the two best places to go. The book is divided up into three sections. It's awareness, accountability, action. So it starts with the awareness that we're being exploited to consume. So it talks about, you know, the different ways retailers and marketers get us to overconsume on a day-to-day basis. Because we need to start with the awareness. That's how I had to get started. The second piece is then the accountability. Okay, we have the awareness. Now we need to take the accountability to detach from being a consumer. And then the third section is action. So awareness, accountability, action. That's the trip that the book takes you through. And really the idea is that you should finish the book feeling empowered to go from being a consumer to an owner. This book's not about being perfect. It's not about, you know, numbers and projections and formulas. It's all about helping you redefine your relationship with money. And again, change your mindset from being a consumer to an owner.
And I love that because once people make that shift, they understand that instead of being a slave to working because they have to bring in money, they can now make their money work for them harder than you could ever work for it. So I love what you're doing. I love your practical stories. I love that you took us on your journey and that you can relate to what most people are going through. So I appreciate you taking time out to spend with us and to share your good word because I know a lot of people can benefit from it. So thank you so much, Ryan. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. I have to say, I do a lot of these and this is one of my favorite interviews. So you are awesome. Thank you so much. This is so much fun.
So Naima, what does it mean to go from being a consumer to an owner?
Instead of spending money to buy stuff, I'm spending money to make money, and I'm gonna be rich. Lesson number one.
So in this episode, Ryan shared that though he had checked off all the boxes and he knew what to do to help other people build wealth, he wasn't personally doing it himself. And he expertly explains lifestyle creep and how that was holding him back.
I was neglecting my own personal finances. And I got caught up in a phenomenon known as lifestyle creep. So lifestyle creep is basically when you make more income becomes an invitation to develop more expensive habits. You can wear nicer clothes, you can go to nicer restaurants, nicer clubs, you can drive a nicer car. And every time you make more money, you make an extra $20,000, you spend an extra $25,000. You make an extra $50,000, you spend an extra $60,000. That was the cycle I was in for so many years.
Lesson number two.
In order to get to a more fulfilled place in his life, Ryan and his wife had to figure out what they really wanted.
We wanted more independence. We wanted more agency over our lives. We didn't want to be dependent on companies and paychecks and bonuses to support our livelihood. And ultimately, it also came down to we wanted more adventure in our lives. We checked all the boxes, but we were left kind of empty.
Lesson number three.
So you want to transition from being a consumer to an owner? Ryan lays out how to do that.
Instead of over-consuming on the depreciating assets, own appreciating assets, the assets that go up in value over time. So stocks, you know, real estate, you know, the assets that work for us even when we're not. So I was thinking about, instead of buying the new iPhone upon release, buy Apple stock. I'm not telling everyone to be a trader, but there are ways that you can invest in the US market with one click, and that's through an index fund. So an S&P 500 index fund, if you buy a share of an S&P 500 index fund, you own the 500 largest companies in the US. The way to make money as a stock investor is own low-cost index funds, number one, so the S&P 500, invest in consistent increments, so it could be a couple hundred dollars every month, don't overthink it, just the same amount every single month, and hold for the long term, and you will make money.
Thank you for listening to my mommy's podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. Bye-bye.